And could you state your name and spell it out for us?
Yes. Ann, A-N-N, Merriweather, M-E-R-I-W-E-A-T-H-E-R, Ann Merriweather, Schaefer, S-H-A-F-O-R, F-A-I-C-P.
Okay. And your connection to the MVRPC was?
I was an employee there for a lot of years, and I have to think, it seems to me like we were in Cincinnati, and we came up here in 67. And in looking around for work here, because I was working for the Cincinnati City Planning Commission and the Better Housing League down there, and in looking around for a job, I honed in on Miami Valley Regional Planning Commission, and they had a position, and long story short, I was there until I retired, however many years later it was, 33 or something, I don't know, that might not be exactly right.
And today is May 22nd, Sunday. It's about 3 p.m. and we're at Ann's home here in Xenia.
In Spring Valley Township, actually.
Oh, sorry, Spring Valley Township.
Yeah, we aren't in Xenia proper.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But our mailing address is Xenia.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Sorry, I'm just pulling up the questions here.
I just hope I can remember enough of some of what you're interested in.
Sure.
So I was up there snoozing. And,
sure.
I've been asleep. I'm looking out.
Okay. So. Okay.
Allergy season.
It is.
You may know.
Yeah, I'm well aware. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bad one. Here in the Miasma Valley.
That's right. That's right. Oh, geez, I've had this since I was a little kid. I remember sneezing and blowing. Okay, sure.
Okay, all right. So, let's see. Let's start about, you know, when you sort of signed on to the MVRPC. Do you remember what the sort of priorities were at that time, around 1967,
1968? 67, wasn't
it? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. The first project I worked on was actually an inventory of commercial development in the five-county region. Didn't have anything to do with housing. And then I did an industrial study, or vice versa, and I think I've got copies of all this stuff. And what happened then that steered us? Housing Act of...
68?
68, yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. And I had worked on housing in Cincinnati, both in the basin and those old neighborhoods on the hillsides. And so I had some interesting experiences there. I remember walking, and this was what we then called slum housing. And I remember walking into an apartment one afternoon, and the door was open. I came in from the kitchen, I think. And the door was open, and there was a gentleman sleeping on the bed in the next room, and he was sleeping on an American flag. And I've never forgotten that, because, you know, he was sleeping on an American flag because that's what was available, I guess. Anyway, that's obviously a side story.
Was that formative in your getting they're thinking about housing?
Well, I've been thinking about housing anyway, because I had been a consultant with the Better Housing League. They somehow, I'm trying to remember how I got hooked up with housing. I think at the Planning Commission, we started looking at various neighborhoods in terms of housing condition. And one of the ones that I spent a good deal of time with, I wonder if I've got copies of all this stuff. I'm sure I do. Was the West End. And you know, if you drive back and forth to Cincinnati on the Western, what is that? Expressway. You can see those West End communities over there. And I don't know, I hardly ever go that way anymore, and I haven't just driven down there to see what's going on. But I'm sure it's different than it was. It's probably, if I paid more attention to current events, I might know, but I was never afraid down there. I walked all over the place. I knocked on doors. Now I had another planner with me, and that was a guy, which may have made a difference too. But I just became emotionally wrapped up in housing conditions and how people were living and the problems they were having. And I worked in the West End, and I worked in over the Rhine, and I worked in, Avondale, up on the hill, Glencoe, Glencoe Place. I've got a report on that somewhere. Did you just come across that? Well, it's a little enclave, and what street is that? It goes downtown, and there's a Presbyterian church on the corner of McMicken or McMillan, and heads down the hill, and Glencoe Place is this little enclave. And I'm pretty sure that we surveyed that. We went door to door. We did that quite a bit back then, knocking on doors and talking to people. I don't know if planners do that anymore or not. But experiences like that, and over the Rhine and West End, that's where I cut my teeth on housing conditions. And I just got really, really deep into it. And then in time, there's Tom's from Kettering, and he wanted to come back up here. And so we did. And I looked around and interviewed at the various planning agencies here and decided that the regional was the best, and Dale Birch was the director. And Steve Nelson. And I remember being at a conference down in Cincinnati, some kind of a housing-related thing, and I remember Steve Nelson coming over to me and handing me an envelope, and it was a job offer. And so that's how we got back up here to Dayton. And it was good, turned out to be a damn good move. And Dale had a lot of guts. I mean, he would go out with these things that were very controversial, and we were in meetings that were very controversial. We had a couple where I thought, sure, they were gonna slash the tires on our cars, and one of them was right down the road here in Bellbrook. So be careful if you're writing stuff that's going to be published about some of these communities that isn't so nice. I don't know what kind of publishing you're thinking about doing here. Are you thinking about a book? Are you thinking about articles or report, or do you know even?
Yeah, I'm writing a thesis right now, so I
That's
don't
right.
expect that it'll be particularly public.
Yeah.
Although the website that I'm doing certainly will be.
Oh, sure. Yes, it's sure. If you're on a website, why? Yeah.
Be careful.
Well, be careful. But this has been a long time ago, too. I mean, the principles are either gone or dead. What did the Gruens have to say? I mean, about MVRPC or Dale and me and the staff there, Steve Nelson.
They pretty much stuck to the report, and they
Okay.
talked about sort of what they found about
Their report and
attitudes.
their book.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Steve Nelson was who was he?
Assistant director. Dale was the director, and Steve was the assistant director.
Throughout this whole era. Or
Golly,
about.
I have to think about that.
Okay.
Dale stayed, and when he left, the then chair of MVRPC, Nora Lake, have you come across that name? Well, Nora's a friend, and I knew when Dale left and that she was going to become the director, I had to get along with her. I had to. And Nora could be tough. And I'm sure if you gave her a call, she'd give you an interview too. She lives down in Centerville. So, anyway, where the hell did I leave off? I don't know. I lose my train of thought.
You were in, you had some contentious
Oh,
meetings.
yeah. Bill
And
Brooks,
this was
one of them.
after the plan had been rolled out, I
Yeah,
think, or
oh
in the
yeah.
process.
Oh
Okay.
yeah. Yeah, and you should have come across clippings from some of those meetings and so forth. Yeah. Where'd you find them? You find them in the library or
Yeah.
really?
Wright State,
In the Wright State Library.
Archives.
Okay.
They have a whole fo they have folders. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that's all there.
Yeah.
Because it was an experience. Not many planners, I think it's safe to say, are fortunate enough to be involved in something as meaningful as that and as controversial as that. And Birch, he was fearless. I mean, he'd go right stomping into it, and take us with him. Minnie Johnson, has her name come up? Yeah. She's in Florida now. Minnie and I and Kathy Emery, who lives in Dayton, except they spend the winter in some, I don't know, south, way south, somewhere. But we were kind of a team, and we, and Roberta Longfellow, and she's right here in town when she's not up in the Cleveland where her grandson is, the little boy. But any of these people, I'm sure, would be happy to chat with you for a while about that whole experience, because not a lot of planners are fortunate enough to have that kind of an experience. And we were, because Birch was fearless. I mean, and I'll tell you, there were people who did not like him. I was at a meeting one evening, and it happened to be at my college sorority. And I gave a presentation and went through the whole thing. And one of those women looked up and said, "How can we get rid of you?" That's what she said to me. This was a fraternity, a women's, fraternity, also known as a sorority. And I said, "You can't," or something to that effect. So anyway, we had some interesting times. And I'm probably just going off on tangents, so bring me back.
I wondered about, so if we're sticking to it chronologically, we're talking about 1967. You did a project around commercial and industrial inventory.
I have those, I'm pretty sure.
Do you remember when, so the inducement was maybe the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Do you remember how that was set into motion at NVRPC?
What did Dale have to say of that?
Well, he said that,
to think about.
1968, I think, and I'm maybe taking a liberty in quoting him here.
That's right.
I think the basic outline was that there was this, the act was passed so that, you know, regional planning commissions had some sort of now responsibility to think about housing.
To
include a housing element.
Yeah,
and all
that
their,
was it, the housing element.
Their planning, and then...
did you find that, the housing element? Yeah, because it should be in the archives.
And so then he knew, you all knew that you had to come up with some sort of plan for housing for the region, but you weren't sure exactly what kind of plan it was going to be. And then Dick Coleman,
he is the one who lit the fuse, and when we called it the Housing Scatteration Plan. Dick is... When I first knew him, he was director of the Better Housing League in Cincinnati. And somehow or other, we hired him as a consultant. And I forget where I was going to go with it from there. He was just a big advocate for the whole thing. And he did a lot of our public presentations and that kind of stuff. I never considered myself very good at public presenting. I learned to do it because I had to do it. And in fact, I remember saying to Dale early on in this whole thing, I said, you know, I'm not a very good public speaker. You know, I'll write the copy, the speeches, and you can give them. Well, he wasn't going to have that for very long, you know, and he pushed me out. And to this day, I don't consider myself a very good public speaker. I do it if I have to. Of course, anymore, I don't really have to very often. But I certainly did not consider myself to be the person who should be pushed out front. And he decided that he was going to push me out front, which he did. So, there you go.
So can you take us back maybe to those initial sort of the initial conversations that you may have had with Dick and about scatteration and why that was different approach?
I think it was Coleman who actually planted that seed.
Yeah.
I remember being in the MVRPC conference room there on the 7th floor of the commercial building. I remember it might have been the 8th floor, but anyway, we were in the conference room. And I remember Dick saying, what we need is a plan that will scatter low and moderate income housing throughout the region. And that became the housing plan. And it was called the Housing Scatteration Plan for a while. I haven't thought back because that moniker didn't hold, and we started calling it, what did we call it, housing opportunity plan, the
fair share. Dale had mentioned that it was the Herbers article in the New York Times.
I'd forgotten about him completely. Did you find that? I had completely forgotten about that. That and the Gruens also.
Yeah.
They were very important to getting the concept, because they agreed with it. At least I think they did. it was an exciting time. I don't think many public planners have the opportunity to go through a period and experience like that. I don't think many have it. You know, I went to work for the Planning Commission in Cincinnati as a co-op, because the coordinator, who, you know, for the, that was, it's a work study thing, and he couldn't find anybody who would take me as a co-op, except the City Planning Commission. He said, these companies, you know, they want the guys, and they're not interested in hiring you. So, but he said, I'm going to get you a job. And he did. He got me a job at the Land Commission in Cincinnati. And I had a great time there because, you know, I worked on housing, and I started out in the drafting room at a drafting table, you know. It was neat. It was neat. I had a neat, some neat experiences.
Well, so you, after Dick planted the seed, you authored the plan.
Yeah,
to a large extent.
I think I wrote it. Yeah, I pretty much wrote it.
You wrote the book.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I don't know, that's just something I was able to do. It didn't really, not just on that, but, you know, we'd develop a concept for a study and, you know, develop the outreach that we needed to get the data and blah, 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 blah. And then I was able to sit down with a, and this is a pencil and paper and a pad like that. No word processing at that point or anything. And write down a title and start writing, introduction. And I could do that. I could do it. So that's kind of, and then, you know, as time went by and we moved up here, and I was working for Nora Lake, councilperson in Centerville. And she said, well, that's ridiculous. She said, that'll take you forever. And so what were we working on? Whatever it was, she put the entire clerical staff at my disposal. I had to think about that. What was that? That must have had to do something to do with housing. And, you know, she assigned this to that person and that to this person. And she said, you know, this is your job to write this up and give it all to Ann, and she's going to turn it into a report. So, yeah. Believe it or not, back in those days, I was able to do that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm blathering on. What do you need to know?
No, yeah. So, at this time, when you were sort of authoring the plan, maybe it was in 1969, because, or 1970 even, because
yeah.
I think the general chronology was that January 1970, MVRPC hosted a conference.
Oh yeah, the housing conference. Did you come across a program for it or anything?
No. I do wonder if you had anything to say about that housing conference, and if you remembered where in the planning process you were. Had you written the plan already? And
the conference was down at the hotel downtown. God, I had to think about the timing
and
on that, though.
Maybe what is the most interesting is, how did that figure into the strategy that you all were taking, the tack that you were taking?
Oh, going out to taking the plan out?
Right, yeah.
I have to think about that. I remember that conference. That was a kickoff to that whole thing, I think. You talked to Birch about that? What he said? Is that what he said?
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't talk too much about it, but it seemed like you wanted to, I don't want to lead the question at all, but it seems like I probably needed to be led. Well, it seems like there was a bit of, the MVRPC wanted to float the idea a little bit and say, I think what Birch said was, listen, there is a plan that we are working on, and it's going to be controversial. And we're going to roll it out in July, and it's going to be a big change.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then that maybe got some of the commissioners thinking about, you know, hey, this, there might be a change in policy coming out, so that they could start to get used to the idea.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And in July, there was the vote on the plan.
And it passed.
26-0, with some abstentions and some absences.
You actually found the minutes to all that?
No.
You didn't?
I haven't. But there's pretty wide coverage in the Daily News and the Journal Herald.
I probably got that stuff upstairs. I probably got it. Yeah. I can, I'll try to
Absolutely.
Take some of it out. You'll have to, you know, you have to tell me what your time frame is here, and
sure.
I could go up there now and grab some stuff off the shelf.
Sure, yeah. If you like.
Well,
we could do that, or we could keep talking and then do that after.
Yeah, okay. Okay, go ahead.
Do you remember what the... you rolled out the scatteration plan, and it was to allocate various numbers of low and moderate income housing mm-hmm. to all of the municipalities within the region.
Minnie developed that formula. Minnie Johnson.
Okay. And the formula took into account like six different measures or something.
Have you found a copy of that?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I've got that upstairs.
Yeah. And so what type of, what was the climate like for regional HUD and FHA offices at the time? Did you believe that they were going to be helpful?
Well, FHA was, as I recall, kind of apprehensive about the whole, and somebody, I'm saying some things that I don't know if Dale would exactly agree with me or not, but FHA was, but HUD, Dale seemed to have connections with HUD, both, locally, or, you know, in Ohio and in Washington. And, you know, Dale is at heart a politician. And he reveled in all that, you know, being able to call the director of HUD and talk about how many units we needed for such and such. And, it was a neat time. I think I'm safe in saying that an awful lot of people in the planning profession that never had as exciting a time as we did. And we did in large part because Dale was not afraid to step out there and take whatever black might come. But he also knew that he had his allies in Washington, and then he wasn't really taking that much of a risk. Yeah. So I think he would agree with that. Mm-hmm. But he was fierce. I mean, he took this on, and when people saw him coming down the pike advocating some of this, you know, they either liked it or they were scared to death of it. Oh gosh, there were meetings out in the communities, and I probably quoted that guy in Oakwood that said, "You don't strengthen the poor by weakening the rich." I always remembered that quote. And you know what the Oakwood community is here, right? Yeah. And that was a very unpleasant meeting. We had some unpleasant meetings. And people just, how can I get rid of you?
What was this after the plan had been unveiled, these meetings?
Because we introduced it and our commission approved it. And that was the signal for us to start distributing it throughout the region. And that's what we did. And we had some very hot-tempered meetings.
How many meetings did you go to during that time?
I could figure that out.
Or approximately, I mean.
Yeah, it was in five counties. And we probably, depending on whether it was, you know, Montgomery County or Greene or some of the, as opposed to some of the outlying ones where we didn't have as many meetings. But I'm sure I've got records of all that. I'm sure I do. It's, you know, I probably said this to you before, I always intended to write a book about all this. And I just never, I think I made a couple of starts, but at that time, Aaron was a little kid, and I couldn't cut myself loose from my family responsibilities for long enough periods of time to really get into it. So that's kind of what happened. I just, you know, time rolls along and we go with it, and all that just kind of, I don't know, withered away, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing has gotten, as I'm sure you've discovered, quite a bit of attention in the annals of planning history and all that. So.
And so there are a couple of ways to measure success of this plan, right? The one would be to look at how many units were built, what effect has it had on crime or poverty or things like this in the region. But the other is to look at what the legacy has been of the Dayton Plan in terms of planning law, in terms of law, in terms of planning culture and ideas about...
Are you digging into some of that? Because I've been away from it too long to do that.
Yeah. Really? I am. Yeah. Well, you know, Dale mentioned that Mount Laurel.
Oh, yes. The Mount Laurel decision.
Cites Dayton. And so does Gautreaux in Chicago.
Yeah. That's not the right pronunciation.
Gautreaux. My French is a little rusty. Gautreaux. Anyway.
Okay. I haven't thought of that for a long, long time.
Yeah. So, I do wonder if, I mean, you've got anything to say about it, sort of, you know, it's life beyond the Miami Valley, or whether or not you remember any.
I'm having a hard time remembering
specifics,
but I know that we got an awful lot of coverage in different parts of the country too, and I know that we went to various places and gave talks on it.
Right.
Yeah, it seemed like every week or so I was getting a plane reservation to go someplace, and Dale I think probably did more of it than I did, but and sometimes we did it together. It was just, as I said before, I think of planning, whether it's city planning or urban planning or region planning, whatever it is, I think is regarded as a pretty low-key, you know, not very exciting thing. Well, we were not low-key, and it was not dull, you know. I mean, we had calls at the house, threatening calls and stuff like that. I know Dale did, and I think I had a couple, because people interpreted it that we were going to put low-income housing in their neighborhoods. Well, Oakwood and Kettering and places like that, although Kettering has, and I don't know what's happened to it, but it was moderate income housing. They took some. I don't think Oakwood ever did. Oh, those people got up on their haunches and just really were unkind to us. So it was, It was quite a battle. And I don't know what you've gotten out of the Gruens about all that. Did they talk about some of that?
They did, yeah. They generally said that there was sort of...
They wrote that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They found that many suburbanites were hesitant because of the class.
You know, riffraff.
Riffraff, exactly. But they also surveyed people from the inner city who, needed, or, just generally people who needed low and moderate income housing.
Yeah.
And they seemed to find that they also sometimes were a bit reticent because you were removing the support systems or something of the... This was them, to quote them, but...
The Gruens.
The Gruens, it is, yeah. And so that they would not want to. But I do wonder how much of an outflow happened, from the inner city to these various projects.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember anything about that?
Mm-hmm. A lot of it was a function of projects. For example, the Kettering, I don't remember the names of some of these.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, or I can show you where it is,
yeah. And
I have no idea what's happened to the residents in some of these places. Centerville was a real bone of contention. That's down on 48 here,
mm-hmm.
south of Dayton. That was, you probably have found some articles about some of that stuff. And I think the closest we ever got to any of it in Oakwood was that you could have not apartments, but actual single family houses that the people got some help to live in.
Maybe it's 235, something like that.
235 and 236. Mm-hmm. 235 was home ownership, and 236 were apartments.
Oh, okay.
And shouldn't be too hard to find information on those programs.
Yeah.
I'll have to look upstairs and see what I can find on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And most of it is, I think, in one location up there. I didn't think much about it today, but I could go up there and see if I can pull anything off the shelf that would be helpful now.
Sure.
You want me to do that?
Yeah, sure. Maybe we could come back and talk a bit more after we look around a bit.
Sure. Okay? You mean look around at my stuff?
Oh, yeah, or whatever you find. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Now, we have to go through our bedroom to get in there, and Tom is in bed.
Well,
it doesn't make any difference.
Sure? Okay, I'll just stop now. So this will be end of part one.
People were afraid that the implementation of the plan was going to bring people into their areas where they lived or live that they didn't want. I mean, housing discrimination is very real. And if you're talking about building a project, to quote, a multifamily.
Yeah, watch out for them. They're poor people.
Mm-hmm. He's wonderful.
Bad people.
You know, he's an architect, and he's designed a lot of this kind of housing, actually, he and his partner. So anyway, that's just the whole thing. People were afraid that. You get into an area like Oakwood, for example. Oh my goodness! I mean, that we had bad meetings there.
Lon, can you get that raccoon out of there? He's eating all the food.
Is the cat out there?
No, yes. The cat's out there, and the raccoon's out there, both chowing down. The cat raccoon is chowing down. The kitty's just.
What's the cat doing?
Around.
I worry about the cat getting in a fight with the raccoon.
Oh, I think the cat would win.
She might. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about?
The communities.
The meetings. Yeah.
Yeah, the opposition to the plan from various municipalities.
And you probably have come across quite a bit of that, so you probably have a better handle right now on what some those communities were than I do, because
yeah.
I've forgotten about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember specifically Kettering and their reaction to the unveiling of the plan?
Kettering.
I think it was Ben Ankeny, maybe, was the name.
On the council.
Yeah,
he was on the council.
That's right.
What'd you turn up on him?
Well, Dale and he and a couple of other citizens of Kettering actually went to the United States Council Commission on Civil Rights.
Oh, I had 71, totally forgotten that.
And
yeah.
Talked about.
Yeah, about the plan. And,
yeah. How it was going.
I had totally forgotten that.
Yeah. Kettering, I guess, eventually capitulated, and they took on some moderate income housing.
Yeah.
And could you talk a little bit about how that happened? So you did the allocation,
mm-hmm.
but MVRPC was not in charge of construction.
No, and MVRPC didn't have any authority in terms of approving.
Okay.
We had that A95 review thing.
How did
and
that
so,
work?
Well, it was a thing that I guess HUD set up,
mm-hmm.
And these projects had to have an A95 review. So we had our housing committee,
mm-hmm.
which was chaired by Lloyd Lewis, who was wonderful. Yeah, and may he rest in peace. He's been gone quite a while. Where in the hell was I? I keep losing my
A95,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lloyd carried the ball. He was chair of the housing committee. And these proposals came to the housing committee first. And then the housing committee would act on them and send them to the full commission. And Lloyd would take those proposals to the full commission, because they had to have that in order to qualify for funding, see? Or at least they needed to have it. They needed to have an MVRPC's blessing. So Lloyd was wonderful. I mean, he was very together, very soft spoken. He's African American, and he would take these proposed projects to the commission and as chair of the housing committee, and he was able to get them approved, you know. So you always had developers who were willing to build them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
but the A95, getting them approved at the full commission, the A95 was a chance for the housing committee to comment on a particular municipality's progress towards their allocation.
I don't remember much about that.
Okay. No problem.
It certainly was an opportunity, and I think Lloyd, as chair of the housing committee, he probably pointed out where a given community stood as to whether they had any housing of that kind.
Yeah.
I think he probably just did that.
Yeah. And did you find that getting the moderate income level housing into places was easier?
Oh, sure.
Why was that?
Well, because the other thing we were working on was public housing. Oh. We didn't even have public housing authorities anywhere among Montgomery County.
Oh.
And Greene County set one up,
yeah.
And they have it. And Miami County, I don't know what's happened in some of these other counties.
Mm.
Miami County had one, and I assume still has it. I don't have my contacts at these places anymore.
Yeah.
And Dark County, I don't think Preble and Dark, those are the western two
mm-hmm.
counties. Look at that. There goes a, it just landed on your shoulder, your elbow. It's a Miller. Yeah, anyway, it's nothing that's going to hurt you, but
okay.
It's just flying around.
Gotcha.
So where was I?
Public housing.
Oh,
versus...
public housing. Yeah, yeah.
So the low income housing was indeed synonymous with public housing.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Oh yes, the moderate income housing, because you could point out that all kinds of people could benefit from it. There he is again. He's right there. There he goes. There he goes. Yep. Squashing. Oh, there he is over by the counter. We live in the woods.
Well,
you know,
right.
Dogs.
Yeah.
I keep losing my train of thought.
No problem. So low-income housing was public housing.
Yes. And people identified
Large.
It as such.
Okay.
And that was tough.
What did they have in their mind? What did that conjure up in people's heads when they talked
Poor
about
people.
Yeah.
People that... were not able to afford market rate housing or even moderate income housing.
Yeah.
It was easier to get the moderate income in. But the public housing, Montgomery County was the only county that had a public housing authority when we started. And I think Greene County might have over here.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't, I think they did. Because that was Donna Denman, and she was really
That's right.
good about
that. We just
that.
Spoke with her.
Oh, you did? Okay. Lovely woman. She's just really great. And then she's okay, huh?
Oh, very well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So, we just had to kind of move this along as best we could.
And the point at which there was sort of a soft, there was some... that you could push through was the moderate income housing.
Oh, yeah.
In the southern, because we're talking about southern suburbs,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah,
that was
yeah,
where the most intractable
yeah,
kind of opposition
right.
was.
I mean, Chevy Chase, for example, which is down there now.
And that's moderate.
And it was moderate, and it's and that's a big development, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of units in that.
I just drove by it yesterday.
You did? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how is that different than... maybe public housing.
Well, because people figured that public housing was for the poorest.
Right.
It was the people who couldn't afford the moderate income.
For example, did the moderate income housing, was that sponsored by the FHA and public housing was sponsored by HUD? Or do you remember the details?
They're all...
Or well, I guess FHA was part of HUD. But
Yeah. It was all those agencies.
Okay.
And people were, they were just afraid. They were afraid that, you know, people were going to come into their community that would be robbing people or
mm-hmm.
beating people up. Or
mm-hmm.
they, you know, they
mm-hmm.
identified public housing with rough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also had advocates. And, of course, the easiest of that to get in was elderly. Tom and I drove by an elderly project just the other day down in Centerville. It's been there for years, it's been occupied for years. But the hardcore public housing, that's tough. And scattered site was helpful.
Mm.
The project. You know, the people just were scared. They were scared
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm. So fast forwarding a little bit to when Section 8 came about.
Yeah, single family.
Was that helpful to the cause or not really, didn't really change much? Or?
I think it was somewhat helpful.
Yeah, we're talking about 1974 around then, yeah. 75, 76.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you had the possibility there of ownership. The 236 was multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
The 235 was single family.
Yeah.
And if you could find the right property, a developer could get a 235 house in there. You know, and you had developers that looked hard for sites where they could put a number of 236 units. And, you know, it's been so long. I would have to go back and really do some digging to figure out which was what and all that.
No,
I just
that's a lot. That's
yeah,
the
I just
very
don't,
complex thing.
Yeah,
so.
I just don't remember all that stuff
great.
After all these years.
That's great.
But I could dig a lot of it up, I suppose.
Sure, yeah.
Digging up bones.
Yeah. Do you think that you then had a measure of success with the plan?
Oh, yeah. I think we did. I mean, if some of those reports, which you must have now,
mm-hmm.
and it shows that it was beginning to scatter.
Yeah.
So.
I think by 1978, the number is about 12,000 units.
That sounds about right.
Have been.
I wouldn't
built.
Have been able to think of it, but that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And that was pretty impressive, really.
It really is.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, I guess, were then moderate income.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
To qualify.
The public housing. That's the toughest.
Yeah.
That's the toughest. And I haven't looked for a long time, but anything public housing would have been small.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been either some scattered single family or some, you know, few unit buildings. And I, without looking back at all the stuff, I don't even remember which was which.
Yeah. Did things change after, when Dale's departure, what did that do to MVRPC?
Well,
or other people's
for
departure.
Me, it was, and those of us who had been close to him and had worked on some of these things that he was particularly interested in, it was devastating. I happened to be in Washington with him for some thinking at HUD, and after dinner, he said, "Hey, you want to go to the bar and talk for a while?" And I said, "I'm tired. I think I'll go up to bed." And so I did. He said, "Okay, well, I'll meet you for breakfast then." So I came down to breakfast, and he said, "I'm resigning from MVRPC. I'm leaving." He said, "I've got an offer at Ohio State to a full professorship." And he said, "I just feel like I've got to take it." And I said, "Well, you know, that's very, that's not good." But I remember coming home that I held myself together. And I went home. We lived in an apartment then in Kettering. And I went upstairs and I laid down on the bed and I just cried my eyes out. Because we had been so successful as a team, not just the two of us, but the rest of the staff too, the rest of the housing staff. And I knew that with his departure, that it would be the end of an era. And not just for housing, but for MVRPC. And he was succeeded by, I think that's when Nora became chair. And Nora and I are friends, and we knew we had to work together even back then. But it was devastating. It was just devastating because Dale was so devoted to the cause, if you will. He had so much influence. He had a good bit locally, but he had a lot in Washington, a lot. And that's how we were able to get all those units allocated and built. The builders there, they were right there. And we used the housing committee and the A95 review process. That was our handle on those proposals. And it was an exciting time. You've probably gotten some of the press. Yeah, yeah, it really was. Yeah, not a lot of planners get a chance to work with anything that exciting, important, and doable. If you had the ducks in order, you know, here in D.C. Yeah, the Gruens, they understood all that.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked at their book for a long time, but it probably goes into a bunch of that stuff, doesn't it? Yeah.
Did you find that, so we talk a lot about, you said, ducks in order in local and in, you know, in D.C. What about ducks in Columbus, you know, in terms of state? Was there any real role that the state played, or not really?
God, I gotta think about that.
Yeah.
I gotta think about
that. That's okay if that's it.
Well, I'm trying to remember.
Because, you know, if you look at Mount Laurel, that's an attempt at by New Jersey.
Yeah.
To really do this.
Yeah, true.
Fair share.
True.
And so I'm just wondering.
In Ohio, I don't remember much about the state role.
Okay.
Now, maybe there's more than that's coming back to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make sense, I think, because I don't know if the state really did play a lot of a role. But
I got to think about that.
Yeah.
I don't remember. There's a HUD office in Columbus,
mm-hmm.
and there was a guy there named Riordan, and it's R-I-O-R, like Riordan, D-A-N. And he was, I haven't thought of him for years, but he was one of the advocates up there and helped us in terms of getting units. Did the units have to go through Columbus?
I think they would have.
Oh, I remember that he worked closely with us.
Yeah.
So maybe they did. I don't know, I'm kind of trailing off here.
That's okay.
Right.
And do you have any other anecdotes or stories about MVRPC that we haven't touched on yet? Anything at all? Okay.
Well, I don't know. I think we've touched on the important things. Dale was the person who made it fly. I mean, you know, he testified in Washington. He testified before the Civil Rights Commission over there. I remember Tom and I went over there. We made some trips to D.C. We made some trips to New York. About the whole thing. And there was a period of time where we were literally getting invitations from various places in the country because we got some publicity about what we were doing, and it seemed like once a week I was flying somewhere to give a presentation. And Dale did more than I did as the director. So it was just a neat time. And you know, city planning and urban planning and regional planning can be really plodding along, you know. Well, by golly, this thing caught fire. It caught fire, and we were all over the country making presentations. It was cool. It was really neat. And of course, I can't be everywhere all the time, but I think it was unique in the annals of planning history.
How so?
What we were doing, number one, and the fact that we were able to create enough interest that people were coming to us. You know, Dale would come into my office and he'd say, "Well, I just got a call from so-and-so. I want a presentation on the housing plan in such and such a city or region, you know, such and such a planning agency. It was cool. I mean, this kind of thing doesn't happen all that often in city planning, because I worked in city planning in Cincinnati, and that I found it interesting, and I, you know, there were some areas like the West End, for example, that over the Rhine and the Avondale, and we had the Better Housing League there, and I had a contract with them, and so I was involved in a lot of that stuff too. Yeah. Oh, it was a neat time. That was the beginning of my planning career. Mm-hmm. And, then Tom decided he had to move back to Dayton. So I looked around and decided that the MVRPC was the best place. And I think I probably said that. I was at a conference in Cincinnati, and Steve Nelson was there. He came over to me, handed me a job offer. That was neat.
And the rest is history, I guess.
I guess so. I guess so. It seems like a long time ago now.
Yeah.
But it was an exciting time. We were doing some exciting things.
Yeah.
And, gosh, I've been retired now for a lot of years. 12, 14 years, I guess. I mean, we're talking about history.
Recent, very recent history, but
well,
still, yeah. But very important stuff. So, is there anything else you'd like to add to the record, Ann?
Jeez, I don't know. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to somebody about it again.
Of course.
It's not that we don't have headlines on it anymore, which we did.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've come across some of that stuff. So.
Absolutely.
Well, have you gotten enough for what?
I think so.
Okay, for what you need.
Yes. Okay, and we're concluding at about 4:30 or so.
4:20.
All right.
Yeah.